Yani, you quit your job at the apex of your career. You know, and you figured up a Jew, then suddenly you decide, I've had it.
Yeah.
This is not working for me anymore. Tell us why and when it happened.
So I felt my energy shift last year in August. But I'll tell you something. Everybody is actually saying what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
I quit when I was at the top of the world, when things were really working for me. But I think it's always better to exit the stage when the applause is still going on.
Oh, okay.
Because people will not forget you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait for the applause to die down, well, you're just the other person or somebody else.
Uh-huh.
So I exited because I still had a lot going for me. But most importantly, I knew my energy had shifted.
Okay.
And I think one of the most honorable things to do is to know when you're done
mm-hmm.
with a relationship, with a job, with any assignment that you have.
Right.
Because I am a believer in giving everything and my all to anything that I do
mm-hmm.
in every area of my life,
mm-hmm.
professional, social. When I am done and my energy is gone, mm-hmm. I exit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what was it that you were exiting? Where were you exactly that everyone was so shocked when you left?
Actually, I think in November last year, I hosted, because I was the general manager of the region, hosted like the first ever healthcare summit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very successful. Of course, it took a lot of people, a lot of support from all over the world to plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the hostess. I was hosting. Mm-hmm. And we took over LinkedIn
mm-hmm.
literally from the 18th of November last year.
Okay.
And so with all the traction that I had gained, and then I wake up, and by January, I was going. And I think the industry was like, what do you mean? You just brought us together,
yeah.
brought the whole of East Africa. I think we had representation close to 16 or 17 countries, if I'm not wrong. And then I quit. And so a lot of people were like, why?
Mm-hmm.
When you stood at the podium, when you're giving a vote of thanks, you still had so much energy. What exactly happened? But what most people didn't know is that I don't do things half-half.
Right.
I knew last year in August that I was done,
mm-hmm.
but I needed to deliver that one thing,
mm-hmm.
especially to an employer that has been super amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's just that my time with them was over, but my relationship with them is not over.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you felt burnout. Is that correct?
I would say.
Okay. And I think a lot of people feel guilty for experiencing burnout.
Mm.
We don't even have the capacity to process it.
Yeah.
In our heads, we assume, why am I so lazy?
Mm.
Why am I so slow? Why can't I wake up in the morning? Why do I have such a poor attitude?
Right.
When it actually is a medical condition, might be mental, but it's still a medical condition.
Yeah.
So like, how did you, besides quitting, did you take any other measures to sort of sort yourself out?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure we'll be speaking about my personal life in a few,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, what most people don't realize is your body
mm-hmm.
reacts to your internal environment. So,
mm-hmm.
and my external and internal environment. I
yeah.
was going through a very tough time.
Yeah.
Of course, COVID affected business.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, I was going through a lot at a personal level.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at my children and I'm like, oh my God, I haven't quite spent enough time with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of last year, I started feeling that the energy I had been using to remain well put together,
mm-hmm.
to be able to deliver in my job and the position I was holding,
mm-hmm.
and have a teenage daughter
mm-hmm.
studying out of the country, and then a son that really entirely the two of them depended on me,
mm-hmm.
I felt that one of the areas, the major areas in my life needed to give in and
mm-hmm.
to just let, I had needed to let go of one, and it wasn't my children.
Yeah.
At that point, I felt that, you know, I had energy, but not energy to continue delivering the high pressure kind of role that I was delivering.
Right.
As much as I really loved it, I was exhausted. And I also kept telling my boss that you need to get somebody who's got the energy to take this business to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So it was both for me, but also for the business.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you've risen through the ranks. You started off as a trainee nurse, and then you went over, you became a nurse, and then you started working in the healthcare industry, but for FMCG businesses. And then you went on to become a general manager. So kudos to that. And, you know, I know you said before, you've not really experienced significant challenges in your career, yeah, but you have gone through it. You've been through it on the personal level. So when we come back, we're going to be discussing exactly what happened and how this contributed to the burnout that Carol Banks felt. Okay. So that's not segment one. That's just a cutaway for the first half of the show, so that guys, changamka kidogo, they don't feel like. And also maybe for editing purposes, in case you feel like this segment is stronger than the first one, then we can rearrange. Yeah. So now is the second one. We're talking about marriage. Yeah. Okay, so you, at the time that you quit your job, were going through a separation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how long had you been married for?
Wow. Since I knew myself.
Okay,
So from 2005
okay.
until 2021.
You got married very early.
Yes.
Why?
So the thing is... I would look at my upbringing also as a factor that contributed to me getting married early. And I would say that, you know, I grew up in an environment that was very, I would call challenging.
Okay.
Emotionally, especially psychologically. So I was looking at totally changing the authority over me.
Because your parents
Because my father, my dad, was, I would say, not just strict, but without really, I don't know. Well, I do know that he went through a very traumatic childhood himself.
Yes.
And I think he never really dealt with his trauma.
Okay.
And I'm very kind to people like him now. Okay. When I had therapy, then I got to understand where he was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, I was a very angry person because I kept thinking, why would he be this abusive? But the abuse he went through, he now became even a worse abuser, I would say, to okay. his children or to his family.
Uh-huh.
And so when I found myself at the College of Health Sciences at the Nairobi Hospital, I think for me it was like a break mm-hmm. from the environment I was used to.
Okay.
And I always, always promised myself that I'll never go back to that environment. I want to be able to flourish, not wake up to being told what I will never become. Mm-hmm. And especially it was always be like, you'll never be successful, you will never amount to anything, that kind of talk.
Yeah.
And I think when I met this guy, I was a student. I think I was still in first year. I was like, wow, he doesn't shout like my dad. He's not negative. He's calm. And so I feel like, and the fact that I was not allowed to date,
mm-hmm.
Interactions with boys, even if my dad came and found me like speaking with somebody, right. a very neutral conversation, my mm-hmm. God, he would erupt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, sorry, that experience kind of shaped my relationship with the opposite sex, with men.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know how to relate with men mm-hmm. as much as I did have brothers, mm-hmm. two brothers, but only my elder brother was there. But I really didn't know how to relate because
mm-hmm.
my dad was always painting a picture, like an image of if you're talking to a boy, then he actually would say things like prostitute.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so for me, and he also painted an image of if you have a relationship with more than one man,
yeah.
even if it is at different times, you're a prostitute.
I see.
So you can imagine my brain took that and really just got wired into you can only have one relationship.
Okay.
And this one relationship must at least lead to something.
Yeah.
So I come in. I don't even remember how it all started. But when I saw this guy's character and everything, it didn't occur to me that we were very different.
Uh-huh.
Really, really different in so many ways. So I committed to what I thought was opposite of my father.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, your brothers who should have been there for you to at least help you with an example of what men are like, you know, how to relate with them. Why is it that they weren't there for you? Because you have two brothers, right?
Mm.
Yes. And a sister.
Yes.
Okay.
But my brother, you know, the thing is our age gap is very like short. Mm-hmm. So my brother is 2 years older than me. And the other one is like 4 years younger than me because my sister is in between. The thing is, like I said, my dad was really abusive.
Okay.
Looking back. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, so my brother, my oldest brother, really has carried my dad's, whatever you want to call it, like
the burden of punch. The
wrath. Yes.
Yeah.
So from when I knew my brother, he was always in trouble. So he was a troubled child.
Yeah.
I really think he's an amazing guy. He was when he was not like the way he is right now. He's really, really down alcohol mm-hmm. and everything. But I do remember he was a nice child.
Yeah.
But as we were growing older, even as early as when he was 7, he was really, really, really like heavily abused.
Okay.
I don't remember him as normal as a child. And so that's possibly why I would say we didn't really have that relationship where I would know how men behave. I know older brothers come in handy. And
yes.
Yeah, with their sisters, but in my case, no, it was really me figuring out a lot of my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the first time you'd had to figure out life on your own, was it?
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I've always really figured life.
Okay.
All the way from, you know, I think from when I was little, I was in boarding school by about just barely 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and back then it was like a trend. So most of us, people my age, would have passed through a boarding school. Maybe not as early as I did, but having to figure out how to get your clothes washed in a very cold place where clothes were not drying and nobody tells you there's an extra uniform you can wear. Or, I mean, your clothes are marked by your name.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a clock in your system that you have to figure out. This time I need to be here, this time I need to be there. So from a very early age, I've pretty much had to figure me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on the flip side, it gave you the discipline that has allowed you to, you know, progress your career so phenomenally, you know. But then let's go back to your relationship. So you meet the first man that you meet, pap, we're inside, we're getting married, we're going to die together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but I would still say, like you said, I still had the discipline to wait because we met in 2001 when I just joined the College of Health Sciences. And then we only got married in 2005 in October. But like I would say, you know, for me, it was my safe house. It was like a place where I felt safe because this man was different. Mm-hmm. He never shouted at me. And then I felt like he let me be. He did let me be. And there was peace for the first time. Where it's not because I'm in a room in my college hostel, but there was peace and it was at home. So I think for me, that was like a big thing. And the years that we spent together, I would still say there were pretty much, I would call them peaceful. Many other aspects that should be in a home or in a family were missing, but there was peace.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was missing?
Support. I would say also some element of leadership. Okay. And then again, like I told you, when I went through therapy, I learned that every behavior that we see mm-hmm. coming from people is as a result of so many things in the background, how they were brought up and everything. So like if I say leadership was missing, I felt that the fixer that I am, I was still fixing.
Yeah.
I was still fixing. So yes, there was peace, but I had to figure so many things, which again, as much as there was peace, if you have to figure out, you have to think about how things are gonna get done, and you're two, then again, it starts to, it did work. It worked
yeah.
for many years.
Yeah.
But then I eventually started feeling the exact same kind of nervousness that I felt in my father's house.
Okay.
I started to feel like, wow, I don't think there's a roof here, because I feel like the rain will be beating us very soon if I don't keep doing what I am doing. Mm-hmm. And there's something, I love to read a lot. And I've been thinking lately, what really, really ails most people, and relationships especially, is that we depend on each other.
Yeah.
We are not created to be dependent on each other. Mm-hmm. We are created to be independent as individuals and then to be interdependent as people.
Yeah.
So what happens in most relationships, and mine was not an exception, is that we come in and then we want to depend on each other. Nobody, or you are nobody, has the capacity to carry the burdens mm-hmm. of another person.
True.
You stand on your own, I stand on my own, and then we depend on each other. Mm-hmm. I am bringing out my 100%, you're bringing your 100, and that brings in a lot of power, strength to each other. Mm-hmm. I feel that I always bring 100.
Yeah.
But I wasn't getting 100.
Okay.
It was, oh, she's very strong, mm-hmm. she can do it, she can do it, so I'll relax.
Yeah, yeah.
So that thing of feeling like you're carrying the weight of the household, I would say for me, I started feeling it slowly though, because over the years, things kept happening and I just kept feeling like, oh, wow, I'm doing it. But I think just before I left, just before COVID is when I felt, no, it's a lot. And then you can imagine what COVID did. It just complicated it even further. Grounded me. I had a job that used to make me travel around. So there are things that possibly I would see if I was here more, but I didn't because I was traveling. There was sometimes maybe elements of peace because I was not there to see gaps. Now, when COVID happened, it grounded me here. I sat down, and as much as I was working from home, I now started seeing, oh, I put in so much work, but it's not the same here.
Yeah,
you know, I wake up as if there's nothing. I still woke up at 4 something, was out exercising at 5, even throughout COVID.
Okay.
I had to keep the organization running. I had to keep my life running.
Yeah.
But then when I look on the other side, people are so relaxed.
Yes. Because their lives are taken care of. I suppose it's the way a lot of men feel about, you know, taking care of a housewife. They're like, ay, banange, I mean, I love you, my love, but you got to go out and get a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That, again,
yeah.
depending on somebody.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman.
Yeah.
No human being wants to be depended on.
That's true.
No. And I am from the school of thought that I don't fight mm-hmm. to tell somebody that you have to take care of your children. You have to. This person should know. So if they're not doing it, I'm going to step up. And I'm going to do it because I do not want to propagate what the father, or where, if it's the father on the other side, the mother, has done into the kids. Because what we don't realize is we are passing on negative aspects of our lives into our children. I am a strong believer in my child. Yesterday there were 5. Today I have a 16 and an 11-year-old. In a very short time, my daughter is going to be an independent young woman. Why would I be fighting with somebody if I can support my child? So the thing is, that level of people depending on each other is the reason our relationships are not working, in my opinion.
So I'm getting the impression not only were you waking up at 4, I assume like all successful people do, is you wake up, you do some devotion or some meditation or whatever, you know, and then you go out, you exercise, you have a personal trainer, so you're out, I suppose, running around or whatever at 5 in the morning, and then you've got to come in, and then you're taking care of the children. So I suppose you've looked at what are they having for breakfast, you know. Then you go to work, and then you take care of this entire business, and then you come home, and then you take it. What? I would be burnt out if I were you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I've really been fortunate to understand
yeah.
is the role of having like an extra hand.
Yes.
So I'll say my nannies, my housekeepers, I spoil them in yeah. a nice way professionally.
Yeah.
But like even when I was traveling a lot,
mm-hmm.
I don't think my ex-husband would say that I stressed him at any point. My nannies, my housekeeper, and I don't keep many. I would have one,
mm-hmm.
one, because mm-hmm. again, I believe in, you know, if you're empowering somebody and there's not too much to be done, it's always easier to do it with one person. So yeah. they are able to go shop. They are able to take an Uber, take whatever form of transport that's available. Have always been very organized. So even if I was in South Africa, mm-hmm. let's for example, and my husband was upstairs
mm-hmm.
and something was needed.
Yeah.
And my housekeeper
mm-hmm.
knew that that's the role I play.
Mm-hmm.
We'd just text each other.
Okay.
And I'll quickly say, well, I'll top up your card.
Okay. So
I always have cards, prepaid cards around.
Yeah.
And or I'll pay by M-Pesa or I'm sending you M-Pesa. And yeah. you can send M-Pesa from anywhere.
Yeah.
Right now. So I value the role that housekeepers, drivers, I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
I struggle because
yeah.
I want to have my conversations without
yes
rumors going around.
Yeah.
But for I would say that I have always had such great support at home with nannies. And I've also been lucky to have some that come and really stay.
Okay.
Of course, because I'm also really like, I'm very supportive. Yeah. I make sure that they come to me with almost no skills, but they mm-hmm. go out with something.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I was running the home and then running an organization. And as much as, again, nannies can do a lot of things, my children are my children.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, there's homework, instruments to be played. And whenever I was home in Nairobi, it was my role to sit down and listen to Amy play her cello,
mm-hmm.
listen to Nathan play his saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
And instruments require a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
So I always take it upon myself that anything the child needs to do
mm-hmm.
and I'm home, then mm-hmm. I am the mother.
Yeah.
My housekeeper's work is to reinforce that when I'm away.
Yeah.
So yes, I was running a home,
mm-hmm.
running a business,
yeah.
and running my own life because I am an employee or I was an employee, a mother, a wife, but I'm also an individual.
Yes.
And like I said, I do not want to depend on somebody
mm-hmm.
even to like validate me. So yeah. I work on my own validation, my mm-hmm. own individualism as I read, I want to pray, I want to exercise. So all those things need to be done within the few hours that I have during the day. And it's easy to get bogged down.
Yes.
If you don't have the yes. right support.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, first of all, I want my son to learn how to play the cello too. So I think I should adopt that level of organization and discipline. But
yeah.
I want to know, so how did it all fall apart? Like what happened exactly?
I think I would say that as humans, we evolve and have learned to never really look at like whatever negative that may have happened in my life that could be coming always from outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I have learned to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I take the responsibility of, I'm very ambitious.
Okay.
And you started by saying I was a trainee nurse and then a nurse and then mm-hmm. the whole
mm-hmm.
career developed. And I think I did a phenomenal job at really growing and reinventing myself along the way and over many years. But I think, you know, this guy married a nurse
mm-hmm.
in a white uniform.
Right.
And this nurse had so much passion and fire on the inside
mm-hmm.
that she was only a nurse for 4 years.
Yeah.
And not just a nurse.
Yeah.
Anybody that I touched during my nursing days bedside at the Nairobi Hospital,
mm-hmm.
some of them are still in my life. And they call me Carol Nurse.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. I told you when I get to do something, I give it my all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people evolve. People change. Some people change quickly. Others do slowly. Some people change a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Others change, you know, not too much.
Yeah.
But if you met me in the year 2001
mm-hmm.
and you met me yesterday, totally different people. I also mm-hmm. have to keep up with myself.
Yeah.
So you can imagine it's not really easy to keep up with me
yeah.
if you're my partner, because I also want to ask you, so you are clapping and cheering me on.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Mm-hmm. What are your plans?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would stop every so often to ask, hey, and you?
Yeah.
What about you? And you can't say you're stopping your life for me. Mm-hmm. Because like I told you, I'll have a nanny. I'll have a structure
yeah.
that means my significant other is not stopping their life
yeah.
to say that they're bringing up the children because I am not there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think along the way, what I see is, first of all, the fixer in me took over.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, I was acting as if there's nobody else.
Okay.
So getting things done.
Uh-huh.
If I identify a problem or something that's going on, I'm like, I don't see anybody else that should be fixing this. So I'd fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Also because they say it's a man thing, but I think for me, that's an excuse. Taking too long to react to something mm-hmm. when it needs to get done, I'll be like, you know what? I'll get it done.
I'll do it. I think we all women have.
Yeah, I'll do it. You can't keep telling me the bulbs are off.
And then you're not fixing it.
Exactly.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need the light. Otherwise, yeah. Why was the light there in the first place?
Yeah.
So I think I fixed mm-hmm. and I fixed. Mm-hmm. Then I fixed some more.
Okay.
And then I think this person was like, so exactly what is my role here?
Yeah.
What is it?
Mm-hmm.
If she can do, she can. He never said it to me.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say to me, stop fixing.
Mm-hmm.
He never said to me, but I want to do it.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm the man.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like if he ever said it to me,
mm-hmm.
I would have really appreciated it.
Okay.
Because don't get cheated. Like I said, no human being wants another human being to depend on,
mm-hmm.
on them. But also, I kind of feel like I've never really been taken care of by anybody.
Okay.
I'm always taking care of everyone. I would have really, really appreciated if he stopped me and said, stop fixing.
Yeah.
I'm here. Don't you realize I am also here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think leadership in a home, because we are all leaders in our own right.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership, a man taking up a leadership role. Yes, it can be what was modeled from home. But I feel like I have had to figure out how to be a wife
mm-hmm.
and how to be a mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it didn't happen for me.
Right.
Because people need to understand, having school fees paid mm-hmm. is not being mothered or fathered.
Yeah.
Having clothes bought is not being mothered or fathered.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. Being mothered is knowing that you can pick up the phone and say, Mom,
mm-hmm.
this is happening. I'm not even talking about sharing the deepest of secrets with your mother, because that's not like a regular, you know, it's not regular that, you know, girls are always their mom's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But I would want my daughter to know that she's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt it. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to say that if a man is not taking up leadership in his home,
mm-hmm.
it's possibly from what was modeled,
yeah,
where he came from or the home he grew up in. But also that he doesn't have it within himself to develop it.
Okay.
And I feel like this is what happened in our case.
Okay.
And I think along the way, we had issues around how we manage our finances, mm-hmm. how that is done, and it could have easily just pulled the entire family
right.
apart.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I think one of the things that I have sworn is that my children are my responsibility, and so nothing's going to bring them down at least if I'm on my feet. And it's not about me having the money or not having the money.
Yeah.
It's about me being able to stand up and ground them
mm-hmm.
and make sure that the ground they're standing on is not shaking.
Okay.
I think the worst thing that can ever happen to a child is to feel that their parents are shaking.
Yeah.
And so the ground they're standing on is shaking.
Yeah.
And that for me is what I didn't want to happen to the kids.
Okay.
So when their dad said, when he left, I sat the children down
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to remind them that their foundation is strong
mm-hmm.
and it is still standing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became very, I've always been a very deliberate parent in mm-hmm. terms of the conversations I have with the kids,
mm-hmm.
but I went a notch higher and I went deeper in trying to, you know, like what the therapist was telling me about people's past and how it affects their future and everything. And so that became like the foundation that I kept, you know, the ones I kept telling my children that don't worry, your dad is a good person. Mm-hmm. But you know, we all grew up in different environments. I would possibly mention some of the things that I thought were the challenges he was going through. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that, you know, like I said, the marriage broke.
Yeah.
But the DNA of their father mm-hmm. is in them.
Yes.
So for me, it's non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. As long as, you know, he's alive, I am alive, his children will always be his children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is absolutely true.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you failed at this thing called marriage?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right.
I did.
How are you handling, like, what lesson did you take away from this? Which my assumption is that, you know, because you're still young, you know, very beautiful, there must be a lot of attention coming your way. So my assumption is that at some point you want to be ready to walk into another relationship. So what do you think you would take forward into the next one, should you get into one?
I think I have so many lessons I learned in this one. I feel like maybe I need to understand the person more. Mm-hmm. And I think this time I would want to know their background much more.
Okay.
I make jokes when it comes to my children and, mm-hmm. and I keep saying, I want to interview my daughter's future mother and father-in-law.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I want to know exactly like who they are, their values, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the environment where this young man or young woman
mm-hmm.
that's coming into my life and the life of my son or my daughter comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of feel like the baggage we carry around
yeah.
is really from where we come from.
True.
And don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm.
I came in with a lot of baggage,
mm-hmm.
but I think I was very aware.
Okay.
My self-awareness is very, very high. I know when I'm offending somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, but it's self-taught.
Yeah.
Like I can look at you or you and I'm like, she's getting tired.
Yeah.
Well, I also am a psychology major, so okay. maybe let me not praise my self-taught too much. I think I was also equipped at USIU with tools on, you know, human relationships and all. But I think one of the key things that we shouldn't ignore
mm-hmm.
is the environment where people grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Who really shaped them?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like the way you bring up a child to think that it's okay to not pick up after themselves or it's okay to not be part of a group and a team and be a team player,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't end there.
Yeah.
It doesn't end there. They'll carry their the lack of sense of the responsibility,
mm-hmm.
accountability, they'll carry that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if, again, also the school system doesn't do much.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe if they grow up and there are no challenges. I experienced a lot of challenges along the way.
Yeah.
And possibly that's the reason why I ended up really like trying to improve myself, trying to read, found myself in leadership positions when I wasn't quite prepared enough.
Okay.
So I resorted to reading and really researching on what it is really like
mm-hmm.
to become the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe, yes, another relationship, yes, it's going to happen.
Okay.
Am I ready? I really think that you can never quite say you're not ready or you're ready.
This is true.
I feel like it's the person.
Yeah.
Because I do not want to take care of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say take care of, don't get me wrong, it's not money.
Yeah.
It's psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want somebody entirely wanting to depend on me for their validation.
Yes.
I don't want somebody to think they can depend on me for their day-to-day. I want to be your sounding board.
Yes.
But I also want to come back home at the end of the day and I have got all these things that maybe went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I've got you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to feel like, oh, my back is so stiff. It's painful because I have all these people whose issues I carry, but there's nobody.
Do you know? Wow, you've just explained why I had such major back pain last year.
And by the way, they're physical.
Yes,
the
it is very physical.
They're physical.
Yes.
You know, when my head tells me enough,
yeah.
The next place where I have tension and pain
mm-hmm.
is my back.
Yes.
Yes. So, yes.
Oh my gosh. And I can't, you know, ever since I got out of the situation that was causing me the back pain,
yes.
it's never come back.
Exactly. There you go.
Anyway. Okay. Okay, so on that note, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and we shall discuss the impact of this separation on Carol's relationship with her children.
Okay.
So you have two children.
Yes, I do.
Okay, and you've mentioned they are 16 and 11.
Yes.
A 16-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And an 11-year-old. Yes. Now, I am curious about parenting, because I've had this said many times before. Parenting, when you yourself were underparented, can be quite daunting because you have no idea what to do. So how has it been for you? How did it begin and how is it going?
I'll actually begin by saying that I made a lot of mistakes.
Okay.
My environment was harsh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was always, there was never like, good, you've done this. And then there's a bit of minimal correction. It was always like, there are so many don'ts, mm-hmm. don'ts and don'ts. And I wouldn't really say like I felt like my mom was somebody I could run to, mm-hmm. because she was also dealing, you know, she was dealing. Mm-hmm. My dad was very harsh on her. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, I think I'm a splitting image of my father.
Okay.
And my mother didn't like it one bit.
Okay.
So she had something negative to say to me.
Okay.
And then fast forward in 2007, I have a daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh God. Mm-hmm. See, if it's a boy, Jesus, you know very well, I can say, you know, it's a boy, so I don't know how to parent a boy, and I can be forgiven.
Yeah.
But this is me. Mm-hmm. It's my daughter. Mm-hmm. Just a little me. But I didn't know what to do with my daughter.
Yeah.
And the first few years of her life, before I really understood that I can work on me, I was almost replicating what my mother did with me.
Yeah.
Like, almost keeping her there.
Yeah.
And then with rules.
Okay.
But then she turned out to be this, she's a bunch of energy. She's so positive. She was really like an amazing child. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up in a kindergarten that had one of the most awesome headmistresses, Julie. Julie saw my child and all she said were positive things.
Right.
And so I was like, I think she almost made me question how I looked at my baby.
Yeah.
Because how can one person... Julie met Amy when she was about 2.5 at Stepping Stones, a kindergarten in Karen. Mm-hmm. And she kept telling me, my God, this child is so gifted. I'm like, she's 2.5 gifted, what?
Yeah.
And she said, she's going to be very confident. She's going to be this and this and this. And I kind of feel like Julie, for the first time, mm-hmm. made me step back mm-hmm. and ask myself a few questions around mm-hmm. how I was parenting Amy. Mm-hmm. And so I started letting her be. Mm-hmm. Like things to do with her dirty uniform, they didn't even wear a uniform. Her dirty clothes, the holes that she'd go to school in a new uniform, a new outfit, and then she comes back, it's got holes all over the place. She was playing like a monkey.
Yes.
So Julie almost like settled my
my
harsh mothering of Amy.
Yeah.
And then I started becoming very intentional.
Okay.
So I started having conversations. And I realized that the more I spoke with the child, mm-hmm. even if I am a believer, I'm a very strong believer of disciplining.
Yeah.
But now I was disciplining differently. Mm-hmm. I was not disciplining from anger.
Yeah.
Initially, I was projecting a lot of anger on my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I realized I was angry not because of her or what she had done. I was angry because of where I came from.
Yeah.
There was always somebody shouting mm-hmm. or angry at me or saying I look like so-and-so and I will behave like them.
Okay.
Because they had issues with that person. But then, you know, so the anger that was on the inside, I stopped bringing it out to the child.
Yeah.
And I became self-aware. Mm-hmm. And I remember... Like, she would tell me a lot of stories, and she was a chatterbox. And and she's a young lady now, and she's really, like, structured and everything. But when I look back, I feel like if I had parented her the way I was parented, mm-hmm. this would be a continuation of exactly the same kind she'll be my predicament, mm-hmm. where she wants to be a fixer, she wants to be everything. Because she's got nobody. So, and I know she's a fighter. She's just like me.
Yeah.
So And I see her wanting to be like me, but I don't want her to be like me in the negative.
Yeah.
Where she wants to fix everybody, including people who have the ability to do what she wants to do for them. And so my parenting now changed. Nathan is very lucky because he found a woman who had found herself.
Right.
My daughter has been very gracious. She allowed me to parent her.
Okay.
As I was parenting myself.
Okay.
And she got it got to a point where I said, we have very open conversations. So I told you she's studying abroad.
Yeah.
So I sit with her in South Africa and I'll say things like, you know, Amy, I made a lot of mistakes with you.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm doing this where you are is because she has turned out to be a great person.
Yeah.
But I also know that you can look on the outside like you're a great person, but you've got conflict and stuff to deal with from the inside.
Indeed.
Last year in July, we had a big meeting when I was still working for IQVIA.
Okay.
With the whole leadership team. And we were staying very close in Pretoria, close to where she goes to school. And so I reached out and the school said, oh, you can have her every evening.
Okay.
So she would come in the evening and she would be there. And it was the top leadership team of the organization that was there.
Yeah.
I mean, I came from East Africa, West, everybody was there. And one of the evenings, I introduced her to, I brought her to the leadership team, and my bosses were always very gracious. Most of them knew and still know my children. And I remember her moving from one person to the other. We had a new boss from the UK, and the kind of conversation they had, I was just looking and I was marveling. And everybody after that was like, oh my God, we respected you as a leader, but we didn't know you are also a great parent.
Okay.
But let me tell you,
yeah.
When everybody left and went back to their countries, I stayed on because I have a child here.
Yes.
And I took her out for dinner and I said, Amy, how are you? And she broke down.
What was happening?
She broke down and she cried. And I was very confused because my colleagues, and very senior people, are just like, they didn't stop talking about my child.
Yeah.
I remember the following day we were in the South Africa office and somebody was introducing me and they happened to have met my daughter the previous day. They couldn't stop. They didn't talk about my career.
Yeah.
They didn't talk about my achievement. They talked about my daughter.
Yeah.
And how, you know, Carol has done and has done. And then the following day, she breaks down.
Okay.
And she's crying. And now I ask myself, why? What is what? Then, and I say to her, "Mommy's here. You can say whatever you want. And if you want me to stay on for another week, I'm more than happy to change my flight to just talk."
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that my child, just like me, had been going through so much with her dad leaving.
Okay.
Especially her dad. And now she was blaming herself.
Oh.
Yes. She was blaming herself. She was saying, maybe if I was not this ambitious, wanting to go to a school in South Africa. And that's when I realized, wait a minute, Carol. You, yes, told the children that life will be even better and you told them all these things.
Yeah.
But you need to do more.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So when you tell a child that it's going to be okay, it can't end there.
Yeah.
First, it depends on age. With my son at that point, he was nine. It was easy for him to listen to, it's going to get better, and he's happy for that moment. But with my daughter, she was already 13, going to 14.
Yeah.
And I remember now looking at her last year, and I said, wait a minute, I thought we were okay. But then I looked at her, she had lost quite a bit of weight.
Okay.
So then I started asking her, what exactly is going on?
Yeah.
And she said to me, you know, I feel like this whole mess at home was her doing.
You know, I don't understand that relation. I mean, I get that children are self-centered. It is part of a development process.
Yes.
And they're incapable of seeing the adults in their lives as being independent. That's not the way that children are wired. In fact, I don't think that even changes even in adulthood. Yeah, because you're still the adult child of your parents.
Yes.
But I'm wondering how, why did she jump to this conclusion? Like, what was going on?
Good question. So according to her, our home had always been very peaceful.
Yes.
So like I said, self-aware.
Yes.
If anything needed to be handled, we never shouted at each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm also a strong believer in, I'm not hiding from the children.
Yeah.
But come on,
Yeah, something.
Why do you? I felt so much, like, I felt so unsafe, mm-hmm. insecure.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of anxiety mm-hmm. at home mm-hmm. because my dad was shouting at my mother
yeah.
in front of us.
Yeah.
And so for me, one of the things I promised myself is that I will never address my husband, mm-hmm. no matter what, in front okay. of the children.
Yes.
Because it gave me a lot of anxiety, mm-hmm. a lot of anxiety. I think I wet my bed almost way into high school.
Wow.
Yeah, because okay. I was very anxious.
Yeah.
And now the anxiety of what was going on at home, even when I was in boarding school, mm-hmm. I was thinking, is my mother mm-hmm. going through the same?
Right.
Because remember, it is displayed
yeah.
right in front of us.
Yeah.
So that anxiety, I decided would never be part of my household. Mm-hmm. And so my children, I wasn't shielding them because the challenges we were experiencing with their father mm-hmm. were really around finances and how, you know, the leadership of the home. So it was never really things that you need to shout about. Mm-hmm. But even if I had anything to discuss with him, I never discussed it in front of the children.
Right.
So the reason my daughter thought she is the cause of the split mm-hmm. is because it happened when she was transitioning to high school, mm-hmm. number one, a school that is not in Kenya. So I think in her head, it was very expensive.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, at that point, when that happened, she did get to know that there was money issues involved there.
Right.
So I think she was like, the money is the money that was supposed to go mm-hmm. to school. Mm-hmm. And so the reason now it's not going to happen for mom and dad to be together is okay. because of money.
Okay.
And the money is because of me.
Right.
So that was my daughter's heaviest, like her conclusion was yeah. based on the fact that she is the one who was transitioning to a high school. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I realized that I needed to talk to her mm-hmm. that what she was seeing mm-hmm. is one of the instances, the many
yeah.
that had been happening. Mm-hmm. But each time, mommy cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So, and the mess just kept becoming bigger. Mm-hmm. So if I cleaned up when it was small, mm-hmm. I was able to, and I covered and sealed it.
Yeah.
And then the next time it happened, it would mm-hmm. be a little bigger.
Yeah.
And then before I knew it, mm-hmm. it was becoming now something
yeah.
that would not just mess me up. It was mm-hmm. going to mess now the entire
yeah.
family to yeah. include maybe even her not being able to go to high school.
True.
So I had to be very candid with my daughter, something I wouldn't have done if she hadn't said that she's the reason or the cause of that, mm-hmm. because I believe in giving children age-appropriate content.
Yes.
Because she is not my peer. She is not my age. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to burden my child with all these things that mommy's going through. Mm-hmm. I want her to know that I'm working hard.
Yeah.
I'm facing some challenges, but all these things mommy can handle.
Right.
But at that point, I felt the need to give her a little bit more than I had.
Okay.
And then, of course, as much as she was seeing a psychologist, oh, the school is very gracious. They had a full psychologist. But then I had to now also have a conversation with the lady
yes.
on the depth.
Yes.
You know, because my children will always tell you they are okay. Mm-hmm. They are okay, they are content, because they think they shouldn't be bothering other people. So
right.
I thought, let me also speak with the counselor at school. So she knows she's dealing with guilt, mm-hmm. and no child should be dealing with the guilt of the parents' choices
True.
Or circumstances, because yeah. it really is not in their place mm-hmm. and not their responsibility.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Does having a master's in psychology make any of this easier for you? Like, do you, or is it?
Actually, uh-huh. it was an undergrad
okay.
that I did at USAU.
Okay. Okay.
I would say, honestly, I think if I just look at it from an education or psychology degree perspective, mm-hmm. I'll say no.
Okay.
I think it is mostly putting into use those principles that you think should be taught to people.
Yeah.
I don't know if you whenever you were in class, mm-hmm. you sat there and thought, oh, I can even teach this because I've really become good at it. Mm-hmm. And you can be very good at something, graduate top of your class, but you don't get any lessons.
Okay.
But I kind of feel like psychology did give me some level of grounding.
Okay.
And the psychology I studied, I think I got to use it even before I left the bedside nursing.
Okay.
And so when you have sick people, mm-hmm. you really practice what you have been taught.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that one of the most amazing gifts that I received as an individual
mm-hmm.
is becoming a nurse. Because people, like even if you go to a school and you learn finance, anything you learn, even mm-hmm. in marketing or whatever, you don't get quite to utilize most of it.
Yeah.
Nursing is that one thing, mm-hmm. one course that you learn something, mm-hmm. you utilize it.
Yeah.
So the psychology I was doing when I was still a nurse at the Nairobi Hospital, I realized that I practiced so much with the patients
mm-hmm.
that it kind of became a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So like when they say, you know, you have to treat that patient as if it was you lying on that bed,
mm-hmm.
I became very conscious of the power I have mm-hmm. over my patients is only because I'm not sick.
Yeah.
It's not because I am a trained nurse.
Mm-hmm.
The people I was nursing were who's who. I was nursing people with degrees, masters, and mm-hmm. PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
So nursing kind of gives you the realization that the person you are nursing is not a lesser human.
Yeah, yeah.
No, mm-hmm. it's because they are not well. If you're not well tomorrow, you will be under the mercy of somebody.
Yeah.
And it kind of, psychology taught me to sit down,
mm-hmm.
to be at the same level of the bed with the patient, mm-hmm. as opposed to me standing, because I feel they feel like I'm loading over them. I'm giving that impression that I'm more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the key things that I was very successful at was convincing patients to do things they didn't want to do, because with psychology I understood that I don't have authority over the patient.
Mm-hmm.
I only have authority because of where they are. They are educated. They could mm-hmm. even be medical doctors. But they are my patients.
Yeah.
But that means I have to be very, very thoughtful
mm-hmm.
when it comes to dealing with people. And mm-hmm. I think my nursing background, and then of course with the psychology from USIU, is the reason I'm very self-conscious.
Okay.
And self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is possibly why I've also been quite successful in my career.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, sorry, excuse me. All of these details are available in your upcoming book. Yes.
Wow. The book. So my book, yes. So mm-hmm. I've shared a piece of me.
Okay.
And I think this morning I was privileged to be speaking with a very influential woman
mm-hmm.
this morning at school.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about why it is important to share who we are
yes.
with the world when we are still young.
Yes. Yes.
And she kept on telling me, it's so great that you're getting to do this when you're still young. And she mm-hmm. also has got plans to empower younger people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really grateful that you mentioned the book, because the reason I'm writing this book,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like I'm at not really half time, because I want to live long and mm-hmm. strong. But I feel like when you're in your early 40s, there are lessons you've learned
yeah.
that could easily equip younger people, not too young
mm-hmm.
in terms of like career.
Yeah.
But I feel like some of the lessons I'll be sharing in my book
mm-hmm.
will be very useful for people who are in their 20s, in their yeah. 30s, even students graduating from university,
yeah.
getting into the job market. Why do I say that? I feel like there's so much that people wish they could share.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you have a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
How much content can I give in one sitting?
Yeah.
Not much.
Mm, that's true.
Not much. But having read so many books,
mm-hmm.
Robin Sharma has shared a lot of his life and almost hacks with millions of people
mm-hmm.
because he wrote. I love Stephen Bartlett. He's a young man. He's just been sharing his lessons of what he's learned about use of social media as a mm-hmm. founder of a company that has been very successful. And I think for me, when I looked at my journey, everybody keeps saying, you're very impressive, from a bedside nurse to a general manager of a Fortune 500 company. And I asked myself, how else can I package myself in a way that I can share?
Mm-hmm.
I cannot be in podcasts every day that don't belong to me unless yeah. it is mine. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if I can write about me, a little bit about how I grew up, where I grew up, about my family, like what I've just told you,
yeah.
in a book.
Yeah.
And then what being in a leadership role, what being a nurse taught me, I think it's an amazing gift that I can give not to just young Kenyans, but to the rest of the world. And more specifically, I really want to give this gift to Africa because I've written on ethical leadership.
Okay.
My book is on ethical leadership. But I've been vulnerable, spoken about my life, my career, my family, and even my journey as a single mom in transition.
All right.
And I believe, you know, that the book is going to be transformational because out of the book, I've also come up with a whole training curriculum on ethical leadership because I believe that now more than ever, we need to talk about ethics.
Oh, and I certainly know a couple of businesses that could benefit from that sort of training.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So is that the title of the book?
Yes, ethical the book is Ethical Leadership, Creating a Culture of Trust and Responsibility.
Okay.
That's the title of the book.
When does it come out?
I actually am reading through the copy now.
Okay.
I have the hard copy finally.
Wow.
And I'm just reading through because then next week I'll give a go ahead for it to be on Amazon.
Okay.
It should have been on Amazon last month actually.
Hard copy and Kindle. Yeah.
Everything. Audiobook. Everything.
Okay.
It's all going to be available. Okay. From maybe about in a week or 2 weeks' time.
Okay,
yes.
Excellent. So you guys keep it locked. And also, if you want to know Carol's exact career trajectory, please feel free to read the description to this video because you will find all of the details that you need there. Now then, finally, how is your relationship with your ex-husband and your children today?
I think we have an amazing. I have an amazing relationship with the children, and like I say in my book, I think the relationship has just gotten better over the time the period we've experienced challenges as a family. My son is amazing. I don't talk about my son a lot. I think my daughter takes a lot of my attention, because she was in a very fragile place when the transition happened. But of course, my son was even hit harder because he's a boy.
Yeah.
But I think what we've been able to do, and I respect their father, I do respect him, is that we are not there yet in terms of being able to parent and for the kids to feel the presence of both of us. But he's making effort.
Okay.
He gets to see the children when Amy is here. He gets to see both of them every Sunday, and then with my son, they are together like all Sundays.
Okay.
As far as me and him are concerned, I respect people a lot,
okay.
So I do respect him. We don't talk much, but we are cordial.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a very good place to be out right now, I suppose, because it's still fresh, so it's a work in progress. Who knows? You might end up being really good friends. It wouldn't be a surprise, you know.
Exactly.
And that is a beautiful note upon which to end this interview. Thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome.
And for those of you who want a copy of this book, I keep asking guests when they're writing books, and then now we have one who actually has written one. This is delicious. So if you want to find out where to get a copy of this book, maybe even possibly participate in a book launch activity.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Definitely.
Follow the social media handles that you see on the screen for Carol Banks, and we shall see you next week for another one just like this one.